His futuristic view of what the internet would become informed his work at the Whole Earth Catalog and Wired magazine. But before all that, Kevin Kelly started a massive project inviting people to photograph the changes that were happening all over Asia. He tells us about his nearly 50-year-old Vanishing Asia project in just a bit. And Seth Kantner tells us why he loves living in Kotzebue, Alaska, just north of the Arctic Circle and above the tree line. But let's start today's travel with Rick Steves with a look at how different species of trees are changing, along with the planet we all call home. You could call Zach St. George a tree hugger, and he wouldn't take offense. Zach has distilled years of scientific reporting and debate into a fascinating book, and that introduces us to five particular species of trees in a way that we get to know each of them almost as a community. A community battling environmental challenges, and a community that's literally on the move. His book is The Journeys of Trees, a story about forests, people, and the future. Zach joins us now to explore how, as travelers in nature, we can actually see trees as a bioculture or a community. And good travelers are all about connecting that way. Zach, thanks for joining us on Travel with Rick Steves.
Thanks for having me.
So reading your book, I am just so turned on by this whole frontier of appreciation we can have by seeing trees in a way that is more like it's a community. Each species is a community. In your book, you talk about as they deal with challenges presented to them by climate change and so on, the community can sometimes pack up and move to friendlier territory, but they do it slowly as trees have to, a community where they grow in the direction where it makes more sense. We hear in Europe about how slowly countries in the north are able to grow wine that couldn't grow it before because it's becoming more, you know, hospitable for those vineyards and so on. It's kind of a story about travel in very slow motion. It seems to me your book is kind of like travel writing. Tell us just in a nutshell what your book is inspired by and the importance of us gaining an appreciation of forests with this new broader perspective.
Yeah, so as people who like to travel know, you step off the airplane or out of the car, and you look around and, you know, you'll have a different cityscape and maybe the signs will be in a different language. Things will look a little different. And one of the ways that things will look different a lot of the times is you'll have a different flora. So you'll have a different community of plants and trees in particular are a really big marker of place. Certain trees are characteristic of certain places. And so what's happening now, though, is that as the climate changes, the places where trees and other plants, for that matter, will live is changing. So, yeah, you know, you'll have places in Northern Europe growing wine where it could never grow before. Maple syrup production is moving in North America. So this book is really kind of an exploration of movement of these really important markers of place.
Now, Zach, after reading your book, when I walk through a forest again, I'm going to have a different perspective. I'm going to see it not as a bunch of individual trees, but as a community of trees that are struggling to survive, a community of trees that has deep roots, pretty much literally, a community of trees that's been there for eons. Is that a good perspective to nurture, is this sense that a forest has its own personality?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, each species moves around over time, and these forests are collections of many species. And so each member of a forest is kind of an independent actor. So maybe at this certain point in time, you'll have one group of characters, and then at another time, you'll have another set of species and characters. And a forest is very much a transient, moving, shifting thing.
Hey, Zach, when I have a party, I love to gather interesting people together, and then we always have a little time where we make a circle, and everybody just introduces themselves so they can be better appreciated. And let's do that with our trees right now, because in your book, you feature five species of trees. Let's pretend we're having a party. It's you and me and these trees, and you know these trees and love these trees and appreciate them, but I've never met them before. Take a minute or two for each species that wants to become my friend and tell me how they are distinct and likable. Can you do that for our little party?
Sure.
So let's start off this big tall guy, giant sequoia. Who's he?
Yeah, so Giant Sequoia is kind of a big personality, the biggest tree in the world, one of the oldest, kind of all the things that people love about trees in general taken to this very superlative end. And so, you know, many of the early conservation efforts in the United States were around Giant Sequoia just because it's such a giant, amazingly charismatic tree.
Charismatic, yeah, beloved. Sequoias are kind of beloved. Is that just because of their size?
I think it is hard to overstate their size. When you see them in person, it's pretty incredible.
Okay, now there's a guy right next to him. His name is Ash, and there's a joke. It's everybody saying, kiss your Ash goodbye, because Ash is in very deep trouble environmentally. Tell us about Ash. What should we appreciate about this tree?
Yeah, so ash is, in this context, is actually 16 different species, kind of a background species. You know, its wood is very much used for many different uses, but it's one of those trees that's just kind of everywhere, not super noticeable physically. But what's happening now is a invasive beetle is killing off ash, all 16 different species across North America. And so it's one of those things like, now that ash is going missing, people are really realizing how important it was.
Damn those invasive beetles. There's another person at the circle here, black spruce. What should we know about black spruce?
Yeah, so where I grew up in Alaska, black spruce was kind of characteristic, kind of a grungy tree, lots of kind of small, scrawny, covered in moss and fuzz, just this very kind of thin, scraggly looking tree, and covers much of Canada, stretching all the way from, you know, Newfoundland to Alaska. So just black spruce makes up these massive forests. And so it's a really good example of a tree that over the last 10,000 years since the ice retreated after the end of the last ice age, has become just amazingly widespread and
wow.
Common.
So black spruce has been quite effective at moving into friendly territory and thriving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
We're talking with Zach St. George. He's the author of The Journeys of Trees, and he's our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. You'll also find Zach's byline on occasion in publications like Atlantic, Scientific American, and Outside Magazine. His website is zachstgeorge.com. That's zachstgeorge.com. Zach, thank you for this introduction to these fascinating characters at our tree party. How about Monterey pine? I hope Monterey pine's a little cheerier.
Monterey pine is another tree that seems to have kind of gotten stuck at the end of the last ice age. And it grows in just 5 little parts of California and a couple islands off the coast of Mexico. But lucky for Monterey pine, people found it and carried it around the world. And it turns out to be a very fast growing and useful timber tree across much of the southern hemisphere. So there are Monterey pines all over Australia, New Zealand, Chile, South Africa, all these places with Mediterranean climates similar to California's, and it has become perhaps one of the most common trees in the world.
So there's a case, Zach, where a tree has had a constructive alliance with human beings, and humans have actually contributed substantially to the widespreadness or the health of that species?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you could almost think of it as being analogous to something like wheat or perhaps apple trees, which were confined, I think, to Kazakhstan before people realized how delicious they were. So, you know, it's something where it has benefited tremendously from human intervention. And that's not an unambiguous good, though. I mean, there's a lot of places in the world where people wish Monterey pines were not.
Hmm. Now, you know, in your book, correct me if I'm wrong, but I came away with the impression that a third of the planet is covered with trees and half of the tree coverage has been destroyed by human beings. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. We are the biggest force working to shape the arrangement of trees and, for that matter, every other kind of life on this planet, whether it's by actively moving things around or by cutting trees down and changing their habitat. And yeah, we are absolutely the biggest force.
you know, everybody likes to talk about the different generations. And in your book, you mentioned the stages of life of a tree, which I think will add to the conversation of our party. You talk about the seed, the sapling, and the mature tree. It's just really quite exciting to be mindful of these different stages. When you think of the seed, what do you think of?
Yeah, the seed is kind of, you know, infinite potential. It's been a human symbol of potential, of course, for a long time. You think of the acorn and the oak as kind of a classic pairing of something small that grows to something big.
My goodness, think of the oak tree. Yeah, and then also a sapling would be the next thing. That would be our kids going to grade school, I suppose. What's all about a sapling? What do we learn from that?
Yeah, I mean, a sapling also, I suppose, is potential, but it's sort of proof that a seed has arrived in the right place.
And then the mature tree, that's something humans have a hard time really grasping, but the mature tree, it makes us seem fragile and fleeting.
Right. The giant sequoia is kind of the most superlative example of that, I guess, of just the fact that their life exists on scales that's almost incomprehensible from a human point of view.
For you, what would be the best souvenir or lesson that we can take home from reading your book?
I think what I learned in the course of writing this book is to, you know, when you see an individual tree, but especially in a forest, to kind of think of it as a transient, moving thing and just sort of realize that it is moving, it is in motion, it is kind of reflecting our changing planet. And this background thing is actually as dynamic and capable of movement as we are.
Zach, thank you for introducing the players in this party. Thanks again for this broadening our perspective. And you do that through your book, The Journeys of Trees. Thanks a lot, Zach, and best wishes.
Thanks so much for having me.
We have links to Zach St. George's articles on the practicalities of addressing a changing climate at ricksteves.com/radio. In a bit, Washington State's first Indigenous Poet Laureate shares a poem about salmon with us. And we hear what it's like to live near the Arctic Circle. But next, we look at what's disappearing in Asia on Travel with Rick Steves.